Proverbs celebrates wisdom, but is there a point where wisdom becomes dangerous? Welcome to The Good Word. I'm your host, Alden Thompson, and we continue our series on the book of Proverbs. Our focus today is Proverbs 8 and 9. My conversation partners are Dave Thomas, Dean of the Walla Walla University School of Theology, and Linda Emerson, Assistant Professor of Philosophy. Now, let me toss that question out to you before we dip seriously into Proverbs. When does wisdom become dangerous? Proverbs will never tell you that. Proverbs celebrates wisdom.
I think knowledge can be dangerous, but I'm not sure wisdom can be dangerous.
Your first question is there a point where wisdom becomes dangerous? And now you're asking, what is the point? So it kind of assumes that there is a point. And I'm not sure that that's a safe assumption.
So you'd make a distinction between knowledge and wisdom.
I would certainly make that distinction.
I don't think wisdom becomes dangerous because wisdom, one of the effects of wisdom is that the person who happens to possess it understands when enough is enough and when you're in danger of mm-hmm. foolishness.
Mm-hmm.
Knowledge, you know, mm-hmm. some knowledge can simply be dangerous because it leads people to do foolish things. I don't think wisdom does that.
Ignorance mm-hmm. and knowledge can lead people to do foolish things. Wisdom is absolutely critical.
Yeah.
Even to know when, you know, wisdom is a realization sometimes even of our ignorance, right?
Yeah, that's true.
Mm-hmm.
So we reject the premise of your question.
No, we like the first question.
Well, that sounds to me like a wise thing. But, you know, in popular circles, people look at the university and they say people lost their faith there. It's not because they were too wise, because they knew too much. I mean, that's the assumption.
So there we go, the distinction between knowledge and wisdom.
Yeah, I think
knowledge is important. Gathering knowledge is important. Yeah. I mean, it tells us a lot of things about the world, et cetera. But wisdom is that power to discern what knowledge to use in what way, at what time, with what people, under what circumstances.
And what to synthesize and what not to synthesize.
And what to synthesize and what not to, and what not to synthesize. Yeah,
and how that applies.
Yep. Yeah.
And I think, like that. I hope you can make that list again, Linda.
Well, see, it's an Aristotelian thing.
Oh, it is.
Morality consists in doing the right thing at the right time in the right way with the right people for the right reason.
Okay.
All mm-hmm. this context stuff that helps us in those places where we think we have contradictory ideas.
And our colleague Dan Lamberton applied that to anger. He says it's very difficult to know right time, right place, right person.
Yeah.
So that's where he used a modification of that. So,
yeah, that's so, right. That's
yeah,
right.
Yeah. Okay. Now, there's an image in Proverbs that I would like for us to think about, because in chapter 8, there are two women who sit at the high place. In other words, they are the epitome of sources of knowledge or whatever. These are called wisdom and folly. And they both call to the simple.
Mm.
And my question is, how do we sort out the competing voices? Now, I think it might be well simply for, it's just a few verses for each one.
Mm-hmm.
Let's read, first of all, the good gal, wisdom. Does not wisdom call out? Does not understanding raise her voice? At the highest point along the way where the paths meet, she takes her stand. Beside the gate leading into the city at the entrance, she cries aloud, "To you, O people, I call out. I raise my voice to all mankind. You who are simple, gain prudence. You who are foolish, set your hearts on it."
Mm-hmm.
And then in chapter 9, verse 3, she has sent out her servants, and she calls them from the highest point of the city.
Mm-hmm.
Let all who are simple come to my house.
Mm-hmm.
Now, let's read about folly. Verse 13 of chapter 9. Folly is an unruly woman. She is simple and knows nothing. She sits at the door of her house on a seat at the highest point of the city, calling out to those who pass by who go straight on their way. Let all who are simple come to my house. To those who have no sense, she says, stolen water is sweet. Food eaten in secret is delicious. But little do they know that the dead are there, that her guests are deep in the realm of the dead. Now, my guess is that this is a married woman trying to, because that ties in with imagery elsewhere. But here you have the competing voices of folly and wisdom. Is it easy to tell the difference between the two? Or do our bodily passions just take over and we ignore wisdom and head for sister folly?
I don't know. I think it's quite plain in Proverbs what's foolish and what isn't. I mean, I was chuckling at this. Let all who are simple come to my house, to those who have no sense. Mm-hmm. She's inviting them.
Yeah.
So I guess there are people who understand they have no sense.
Well, both of these appeal to the simple. But one is, do you want to get strong and learn wisdom, or do you want to just go and throw your life away? Mm-hmm. See, that's really kind of the choice here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I wonder, Alden, if we ever do foolish things without some knowledge of it, some sense that we are doing something foolish.
I think that's a really good question, and that takes me back to a discussion we had a few weeks ago about the sluggard. We were, you know, kind of defining the sluggard as a lazy bones. It may be that we can define a sluggard to be someone who is just complacent. You know, someone who is unwilling to, or I don't know about unable, but someone who actually chooses not to step up into his or her whole life, and to think carefully about how to discern what the right thing to do is, or the right thing to think even is, or even how to pursue the gaining of knowledge. In other words, where to pursue, whether we're in the pursuit of actual knowledge or kind of what we might call pseudo knowledge, you know, because they're all, that makes this message a little bit more timeless than maybe a particular admonition written for a particular people.
But the descriptions of the sluggard in all of his various variations in Proverbs are really quite vivid. I mean, there's one that says, you know, he puts his hand into the food dish and doesn't even have enough energy to get it back to his mouth.
Well, that would be great.
But yeah, what I'm saying is I think there's something instinctive about us as humans that we know when we're doing something foolish.
Not
100%, you know, because sometimes you do it unwittingly. But
yeah, I think we have maybe at least a vague awareness that we are not doing what we could.
Yes.
I don't know. That's maybe, maybe I'm just projecting the way I experience my life onto the way everyone experiences life, and I can't really do that.
I think there are enough people who have that experience that we can do that.
Okay.
But I think there are certain things where we are simply not informed.
Yes.
Where you sin against culture.
That's different from...
That's true. But Jerry Winslow, for example, when he finished his doctoral studies, you and I have a great deal of regard for Jerry, but I've used this illustration quite a bit, because when he finished his dissertation, he wanted to get it published.
Mm-hmm.
He sent it to three publishers, not realizing that you only send it to one
and wait for a response.
Because they pay real money to get those things evaluated. And Jerry didn't realize it until two of them said they wanted to publish it.
Oh, no.
And, you know, he said they were gracious to him, but they made it quite clear that he had broken.
He had been foolish.
But I think that's different from the sluggard that we're talking about.
Yeah. Or from going into the home of folly.
Yeah.
You know, you want to tell me, and I noticed that it says that people who are going on their way straight, and yet she's trying to distract them, and it's pretty hard to think that you would not have a sense that I have been distracted by folly.
Yeah. Right.
And there probably are some, especially in this area, who think, well, I'll just have a little bit of fun, without realizing that it is a death trap.
And even having the idea that I can just have a little bit of fun and there won't be any consequences for that.
Yeah, that's true.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I was interested in this chapter where the author tucks in the references to the Lord. And let me just do that, because I think it raises some interesting questions as to how that may be a motivation for us. Verse 13, the fear of the Lord is to hate evil. I hate pride and arrogance, evil behavior, and perverse speech. So the fear of the Lord is to hate evil. I hate pride and arrogance, evil behavior, and perverse speech. Now, would the normal moral person who is not religious be able to also say, I hate pride, arrogance, evil behavior, perverse speech?
Why would, may I ask the question in reverse? Why would that person not be able to do that? Is there no notion of evil outside of a spiritual worldview? Is that what you're asking?
No, my point is that some religious people think that because they are religious, they have an inside track on morality.
Sure. Right.
But sure. I think that many of the things that believers would say, this is good, this is bad,
right.
That would be a full echo from secular people.
Correct. Yeah. And I think the connection is reason. Obviously, the person of a spiritual worldview, well, not obviously, but often that person embraces as true, at least in some ways, a scripture, a religious text of some sort, mm-hmm. Where there is both the element of critical knowledge, but also of revealed knowledge. But reason is involved in coming to understanding of those texts, and reason is involved in the living of a human life in an entirely secular, or we might say secular humanist sort of setting. In fact, the resonances, I think, are just too compelling to ignore.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, one of my favorite prayers, in fact, is probably my favorite prayer in the New Testament. If you are seeking to do right, Lord, I believe, help my unbelief.
That's right.
That's a prayer that
that's
we can always pray. And if we are sincere and focused on it, we can go that direction.
Well, here we go. And you say in Proverbs 9:10, this last quote, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. And we've already initiated a conversation about what we mean by that word fear,
mm-hmm.
having some proper sense of awe about what we can know and what we cannot know.
Now, there's a practical question here. Has to do with teaching, because I've given two examples here, the fear of the Lord. The first one in chapter 9, verse 10, at least first one on this list. Fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and knowledge of the Holy One is understanding. These are parallel, synthesizing. They say the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
They're synonymous. But notice how it comes in chapter 1, verse 7.
Hmm.
The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and instruction.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in your teaching, mm-hmm. can you safely say that it's better to have a double positive as over against a positive and a negative?
Well, I think it's both and, Alden. I think, I when you're teaching, you have to be pretty wise and engineer mm-hmm. things. Try, if it doesn't work mm-hmm. this way, you try it another way, and you try it another way. And we all learn in different manners, and contrast work for some, but
in fact, some might need a double negative.
But I am interested how this phrase, the fear of the Lord, mm-hmm. is a foundational phrase, and it has multiple tails depending on which one. So it is a foundational truth that I think the Proverbs holds to.
And I think that we need to see it as having awe, but with a touch of fear, real genuine fear. Time is up. I want to thank Dave and Linda for their participation today. And my thanks to David Olson, our program engineer, to all of you for listening in. For The Good Word, I'm Alden Thompson.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.